Boot. A heretic. A crackpot, I complete for him. You don't really believe we're math equations.
I might.
He lies back down. But how do you know which input to change? I ask. He sighs a long, suffering sigh.
Yeah, that's the problem. Even if you could figure out which one to change, then how much should you change it? And what if you can't change it precisely enough? Then you couldn't predict the new output. You could make things worse.
He sits up again.
Imagine, though, if you could just change the right inputs, you could fix things before they went wrong.
He says this last part quietly, but with the frustration of someone who's been trying to solve the same unsolvable problem for a long time now. Our eyes meet and he looks embarrassed, like he's revealed more than he meant to. He lies back down and throws a forearm across his eyes.
The problem is chaos theory. There are too many inputs to the formula, and even the small ones matter more than you think. And you can never measure them precisely enough, but if you could, you could write a formula to predict the weather, the future, people.
But chaos theory says you can't?
Yep.
You needed a whole branch of mathematics to tell you that people are unpredictable?
Had that figured out, did you?
Books, Ollie. I learned it from books. He laughs, rolls onto his side, and laughs some more. He's infectious, and I'm laughing too, my whole body responding to him. I watch for the dimple that I'm no longer supposed to be paying attention to. I want to put my finger into it and keep him smiling forever. Maybe we can't predict everything, but we can predict some things. For example, I am certainly going to fall in love with Ollie. It's almost certainly going to be a disaster. Madeline's Dictionary. Obsession. Noun. Plural. Obsessions. 1. Acute and completely justifiable interest in something or someone acutely interesting. 2015, Whittier. Secrets. My constant IMing with Ollie is catching up with me. I fall asleep during not one, but two movie nights with my mom. She begins worrying that something's wrong, that my immune system is compromised somehow. I tell her it's simpler than that. I'm just not getting enough sleep. I guess I understand why, given our situation, her doctor's brain would go immediately to the worst-case scenario. She tells me what I already know, that lack of sleep is not good for someone with my condition. I promise to be better. That night, I only IM with him until 2 a.m., instead of our usual 3 a.m. It feels strange not to talk to my mom about something, someone, who's becoming so important to me. My mom and I are drifting apart, but not because we're spending less time together, and not because Ollie's replacing her. We're drifting apart because for the first time in my life, I have a secret to keep. Thank you for shopping. Email. Thank you for shopping at Blue Tag. Blue Tag customer service to me. Payment method, Pauline Whittier. Visa ending in 4492. Amount, $236.19. Item, description. One classic tea in enlivened orange, $29.99. One classic tea in ecstatic blue, $29.99. One classic tea in enraptured moss, $29.99. One classic tea in unbearable ochre, $29.99. One classic tea in impatient black, $29.99. One classic tea in jittery white, $29.99. Canvas shoes, giddy blue, $54.99. Numerology. Number of minutes it took Ollie's dad to begin yelling after he arrived home last night. 8. Complaints about the goddamn roast beef being overcooked again. 4. Times Ollie's mom apologized. 6. Times Ollie's dad called Kara a goddamn freak for wearing black nail polish. 2. Minutes it takes Ollie's mom to remove Kara's nail polish. 3. Times Ollie's dad mentioned that he knows someone has been drinking his goddamn whiskey. 5. That he's the smartest guy in the house. 2. That no one should forget that he makes all the money. 2. Pun-filled jokes it takes to get Ollie feeling marginally better when he IMs at 3 a.m. 5. Times he writes, "It doesn't matter," during our IM conversation. 7. Hours of sleep I got last night. 0. Cigarettes Kara buried in the garden this morning. 4. Visible bruises on Ollie's mom. 0. Invisible bruises? Uncertain. Hours until I see Ollie again? 0.5. Ollie says, he's not on the wall when I see him again the next day. Instead, he's in what I've begun to think of as his resting position, bouncing lightly on the balls of his feet with his hands tucked into his pockets. "Hi," I say from the door, waiting for my stomach to complete its crazy Ollie dance.
"Hey yourself."
His voice is low and a little rough, sleep-deprived.
"Thanks for chatting last night,"
he says, eyes tracking me all the way to the couch.
"Anytime."
My own voice is husky and low as well. He looks paler than usual today, and his shoulders are slumped forward a little. But still, he's moving.
"Sometimes I wish I could just disappear and leave them,"
he confesses, ashamed. I want to say something, not just something, but the perfect thing to comfort him, to make him forget his family for a few minutes, but I can't think of it. This is why people touch. Sometimes words are just not enough. Our eyes meet, and since I can't hug him, I wrap my arms around my own waist, holding on tight. His eyes drift across my face as if he's trying to remember something.
"Why do I feel like I've always known you?"
he asks. I don't know, but I feel it too. He stops moving, having come to whatever decision he needed to. He says, your world can change in a single moment. He says no one is innocent, except maybe you, Madeline Whittier. He says that his dad wasn't always this way. Chaos Theory. 10-year-old Ollie and his dad are at the breakfast bar in their old penthouse apartment in New York City. It's Christmas time, so maybe it's snowing outside, Or maybe it just stopped snowing. This is a memory, so the details are a bit uncertain. His dad has made fresh hot chocolate. He's a connoisseur and prides himself on making it from scratch. He melts actual bars of baking chocolate and uses whole 100% of the fat milk. He takes Ollie's favorite mug, pours in a layer of chocolate, and adds 6 ounces of hot milk heated to almost boiling on the stove, never in the microwave. Ollie stirs the milk and chocolate together while his dad gets the whipped cream, also freshly made, from the fridge. The cream is just lightly sweetened, the kind of sweet that makes you want more. He spoons 1 dollop, maybe 2, into Ollie's mug. Ollie raises his cup and blows on the already melting whipped cream. It slides across the surface like a miniature iceberg. He eyes his dad over the top of the mug, trying to gauge what kind of mood he's in. Lately, the moods have been bad. Worse than normal.
Newton was wrong, his dad says now. The universe is not deterministic.
Ollie kicks his legs. He loves when his dad talks to him like this, mano a mano, like he's a grown-up, even though he doesn't always understand what he's saying. They've been having more of these conversations since his dad's suspension from work.
What does that mean? Ollie asks.
His dad always waits for Ollie to ask before explaining anything.
It means one thing doesn't always lead to another, he says, and takes a slurp of hot chocolate.
Somehow his dad never blows on the hot liquid first. He just dives right in.
It means you can do every goddamn thing right, and your life can still turn to shit.
Ollie holds his sip of hot chocolate in his mouth and stares at his mug. A few weeks ago, Ollie's mom had explained that his dad was going to be home for a while until things were fixed at his work. She wouldn't say what was wrong, but Ollie had overheard words like fraud and investigation. He wasn't quite sure what any of it meant, only that his dad seemed to love Ollie and Kara and his mom a little less than he did before. And the less he seemed to love them, the more they tried to become more lovable. The phone rings and his dad strides over to it. Ollie swallows his mouthful of hot chocolate and listens. At first, his dad uses his work voice, the one that's angry and relaxed at the same time. Eventually, though, his voice just turns to angry.
You're firing me? You just said those assholes were clearing me.
Ollie finds himself getting angry, too, on behalf of his dad. He puts his mug down and slips off his stool. His dad paces the length of the room. His face is a storm.
I don't care about the goddamn money. Don't do this, Phil. If you fire me, everyone's gonna think...
He stops moving and holds the phone away from his ear. He doesn't say anything for a long minute. Ollie stops moving, too, hoping that whatever Phil says next will fix everything.
Jesus! You guys can't do this to me! No one's gonna touch me after this!
Ollie wants to go to his dad and tell him everything is going to be okay, but he can't. He's too afraid. He slips out of the room, taking his hot chocolate with him. The first time Ollie's dad gets afternoon drunk, violent drunk, yelling at the top of his lungs drunk, doesn't remember what happened the next day drunk, doesn't happen until a few months later. He'd been home all day, arguing with financial news shows on television. One of the anchors mentioned the name of his old company, and he raged. He poured whiskey into a tall glass and then added vodka and gin. He mixed them together with a long spoon until the mixture was no longer the pale amber color of the whiskey
and looked like water instead. Ollie watched the color fade in the glass and remembered the day his dad got fired and how he'd been too afraid to comfort him. What if he had? Would things be different now? What if? He remembered how his dad had said that one thing doesn't always lead to another. He remembered sitting at the breakfast bar and stirring the milk and chocolate together, how the chocolate turned white and the milk turned brown, and how sometimes you can't unmix things, no matter how much you might want to. Project name, Ollie's Formula, notebook number 30. Find Z in the following equation. X plus Y equals Z, where X is unknown and unknowable, and where Y is unknown and unknowable. A Tale of Two Maddies. Your mother wants to know if I've noticed anything different about you lately, says Carla from across the living room. I'm watching the first Mission Impossible movie with Tom Cruise. He plays a super spy, Ethan Hunt, who leads a double, sometimes triple, and sometimes quadruple life. It's toward the end, and Ethan has just unmasked himself, literally, to catch the bad guys. Carla repeats herself, louder this time. And have you? I ask, as Ethan is pulling off his incredibly realistic mask to reveal his true face. I tilt my head to one side for a better perspective. Carla grabs the remote from my hand and hits pause. She tosses the remote into the corner of the couch. What's wrong? I ask, feeling guilty for ignoring her. It's you and that boy. What do you mean? She sighs and sits. I knew it was a mistake letting you two see each other. She has my full attention now. What did my mom say? Did you cancel a movie night with her? I knew I shouldn't have done it. She looked so hurt and disappointed, but I didn't want to wait until after 9 to I am with Ollie. I can't get enough of talking to him. I'm overflowing with words. I'll never come to the end of all the things I want to say to him. And she says you're distracted all the time, and you ordered a lot of clothes and shoes, and she almost beat you at some game that you always win. Oh. Does she suspect? That's all you're worrying about. Listen to what I'm telling you. Your mother is missing you. She's lonely without you. You should have seen her face when she was asking me. I just... No, she says, holding a hand up. You can't see him anymore. She picks up the discarded remote and clutches it in her hands, looking anywhere but at me. Panic sends my heart racing. Carla, please. Please don't take him away from me. He's not yours. I know. No, you don't know. He's not yours. Maybe he has time for you right now, but he's going to go back to school soon. He's going to meet some girl, and he's going to be her Ollie. Do you understand me? I know she's just trying to protect me, just as I was trying to protect myself a few short weeks ago. But her words make me aware that the heart in my chest is a muscle, like any other. It can hurt. I understand, I say quietly. Spend some time with your mother. Boys come and go, but mothers are forever. I'm sure she said these very same words to her Rosa. All right. She hands me back the remote. Together we watch the unmoving screen. She pushes down on the tops of her knees with both hands and rises. Did you mean it? I ask her when she's halfway across the room. Mean what? You said that love couldn't kill me.
Yes, but it might kill your mother.
She manages a small smile. I hold my breath, waiting.
Okay, fine. You can still see him. But you have to get some sense into you. You understand?
I nod my agreement and turn the television off. Ethan Hunt vanishes. I spend the rest of the day in the sunroom, away from Carla. I'm not angry at Carla, but I'm not angry either. All my doubts about keeping Ollie a secret from my mom have vanished. I can't believe that one canceled date with her almost led to my not being able to see Ollie again. Before, I was worried about keeping secrets from her. Now, I'm worried about not being able to have any secrets at all. I know she's not upset that I bought new clothes. She's upset that I didn't ask her opinion and bought them in colors that she didn't expect. She's upset with the change she didn't see coming. I resent and understand it at the same time. She's had to control so many things to keep me safe in my bubble. And she's not wrong. I have been distracted when I'm with her, my mind constantly tuning into Radio Ollie. I know she's not wrong, but still I resent it. Isn't growing apart a part of growing up? Don't I get to have even this bit of normalcy? Even so, I feel guilty. She's devoted her entire life to me. Who am I to throw that away at the first sign of love? Carla eventually finds me for our 4 p.m. checkup. Is there such a thing as sudden-onset schizophrenia? I ask.
Why? You have it?
Maybe. Am I talking to good Maddie or bad Maddie right now?
Unclear.
She pats my hand. Be good to your mama. You're all she has.
Freedom card.
Email. We've received your credit card application. Argentis Inc. to me. Thank you for applying for your new Argentis Freedom Card. The credit card that allows you the flexibility and spending power to pursue your dreams and plan for the future. Your personal information. Madeline F. Whittier, 304 Papillon Way. Upside down. Normal people pace when they're nervous. Ollie stalks.
Ollie?
It's just a handstand. Against a wall. I'll be fine. It's taken me an hour to convince him to show me how to do one.
You don't have enough wrist or upper body strength, he grumbles.
You used that one already. Besides, I'm strong, I say, and flex a single bicep. I can bench press my weight in books. He smiles a little at that, then mercifully stops stalking. He flicks his rubber band as his eyes scan my body, mentally critiquing my lack of physical fortitude. I roll my eyes as dramatically as possible.
Fine, he sighs with equal drama. Squat,
he demonstrates. I know what a...
Concentrate.
I squat down. From across the room, he checks my form and instructs me to make adjustments. Hands 12 inches apart, arms straight with elbows pressed against my knees, fingertips splayed until I'm just right.
Now, he says, shift your weight forward just slightly until your toes come off the ground.
I shift too far and roll head over heels onto my back.
Huh,
he says, and then presses his lips together. He's trying not to laugh, but the telltale dimple gives it away. I get back in position.
More shift, less tilt, he says,
I thought I was shifting.
Not so much. Okay, now, watch me.
He crouches down.
Hands 12 inches apart, elbows against your knees, fingertips splayed. Then slowly, slowly shift your weight forward onto your shoulders. Get those toes off the ground, and then just push yourself up.
He pushes up into the handstand with his usual effortless grace. Again, I'm struck by how peaceful he is in motion. This is like meditation for him. His body is his escape from the world, whereas I'm trapped in mine.
Do you want to see it again?
He asks, flowing back to his feet. Nope. Overeager, I push forward into my shoulder as instructed, but nothing happens. Nothing happens for about an hour. My lower half remains firmly anchored to the ground while my upper arms burn from the effort. I manage several more unintentional somersaults. By the end, all I've gotten good at is not yelping as I roll over.
Take a break?
He asks, still trying not to smile. I growl at him, lower my head and push forward again into another somersault. Now he's definitely laughing. I remain flat on my back, catching my breath, and then I'm laughing along with him. A few seconds later, I crouch back into a squat. He shakes his head.
Who knew you were this stubborn?
Not me. I didn't know I was this stubborn. He claps his hands together.
Okay, let's try something new. Close your eyes.
I close them.
Good. Now, pretend you're in outer space.
With my eyes closed, he feels closer, as if he's right next to me instead of across the room. His voice slides up my neck, whispers into my ear.
See the stars? And that asteroid field? And that lonely satellite going by? There's no gravity. You're weightless. You can do anything you want with your body. You just have to think it.
I tilt forward, and suddenly I'm upside down. At first I'm not sure I've done it. I open and close my eyes a few times, but the world remains inverted. Blood rushes to my head, making me feel heavy and lightheaded all at once. Gravity pulls my mouth into a smile and tugs my eyes open. I am wonderfully foreign in my own body. My upper arms begin to wobble. I overtilt from the vertical position and my feet touch the wall. I push off to reverse my direction and fall back into a crouch.
Awesome, Ollie says, clapping. You even held it for a few seconds. Pretty soon you won't need the wall at all.
How about now? I say, wanting more, wanting to see the world the way he does. He hesitates, about to argue, but then his eyes meet mine. He nods and crouches down to watch. I squat, shift, and push up. I'm unstable almost immediately and begin to fall backward. Ollie's suddenly right next to me, his hands on the bare skin of my ankles, holding me steady. Every nerve in my body migrates to where he touches. The skin under his hand sparks to life, every cell alight with feeling. I feel as if I've never been touched before.
Down,
I say, and he gently lowers my legs until they're back on the ground. I wait for him to move back to his corner, but he doesn't. Before I can think better of it, I stand up and face him. We're only 3 feet apart. I could reach out and touch him if I wanted to. I move my eyes slowly up to his.
You okay?
He asks. I mean to say yes, but I shake my head instead. I should move. He should move. He needs to go back to his side of the world, but he doesn't. And I can see in his eyes that he won't. My heart beats so loudly that I'm certain he can hear it.
Maddie?
My name is a question, and my eyes move to his lips. He reaches out his right hand and grabs my left index finger. His hand is rough, uneven with calluses, and so warm. He rubs his thumb once across my knuckle and then cocoons my finger in the palm of his hand. I look back down at my hand. Friends are allowed to touch, right? I disentangle my finger so that I can entangle all the others until our palms are pressed against each other. I look back up to his eyes and see my reflection there. What do you see? I ask.
Well, the first thing is those freckles.
You're obsessed.
Slightly. It looks like someone sprinkled chocolate across your nose and cheeks.
His eyes travel down to my lips and back up to my eyes.
Your lips are pink, and they get pinker when you chew on them. You chew on them more when you're about to disagree with me. You should do that less. The disagreeing, not the chewing. The chewing is adorable.
I should say something. Stop him. But I can't speak.
I've never seen anyone with hair as long and poofy and curly as yours is. It looks like a cloud.
If clouds were brown, I say, finally finding my voice, trying to break the spell.
Yes, curly brown clouds. And then your eyes. I swear they change color. Sometimes they're almost black. Sometimes they're brown. I'm trying to find a correlation between the color and your mood, but I don't have it yet. I'll keep you posted.
Correlation is not causation, I say, just to have something to say. He grins and squeezes my hand.
What do you see?
I want to answer, but I find that I can't. I shake my head and look back down at our hands. We remain that way, sliding between certainty and uncertainty and back again, until we hear Carla's approach and are forced to part. I am made. I am unmade. Skin. I read once that, on average, we replace the majority of our cells every 7 years. Even more amazing, we change the upper layers of our skin every 2 weeks. If all the cells in our body did this, we'd be immortal. But some of our cells, like the ones in our brains, don't renew. They age, and age us. In 2 weeks, my skin will have no memory of Ollie's hand on mine. But my brain will remember. We can have immortality or the memory of touch, but we can't have both. Friendship. Later, 8:16 p.m.
You're logged on early.
I told my mom I had a lot of homework.
Are you all right?
Are you asking if I'm sick?
Yes.
So far, so good.
Are you worried?
No. I'm fine. I'm sure I'm fine.
You are worried.
A little.
I shouldn't have. I'm sorry.
Please don't be. I'm not. I wouldn't trade it.
Still. Are you sure you're okay?
I feel brand new.
All from holding hands, huh? Imagine what a kiss would do.
Dot, dot, dot. Friends don't kiss, Ollie.
Really good ones can.
Research. 24 hours later, kissing is all I think about. I see the words, imagine what a kiss would do, whenever I close my eyes. At some point, it occurs to me that I don't know anything about kissing. Of course, I've read about it. I've seen enough kissing in movies to get the idea. But I've never pictured myself as a kissee, and certainly not a kisser. Carla says we're probably okay to see each other again today, but I decide to wait a couple more days. She doesn't know about the touch on my ankle, the holding hands, the almost shared breath. I should tell her, but I don't. I'm afraid she'll stop our visits. Another lie to add to my growing count. Ollie's now the only person in my life that I haven't lied to. 48 hours post-touch, and I'm still feeling fine. I sneak peeks at my charts when Carla's not looking. Blood pressure, pulse, and temperature all seem okay. No early warning signs in sight. My body goes a little haywire when I imagine kissing Ollie, but I'm pretty sure that's just love sickness. Project name. Kissing Primer. 1 of 3. Notebook number 17. Pre-kiss checklist. Lip balm. Check. Review potential hand positions. Hair. Shoulder. Waist. Check. Practice kissing technique. Soft area between thumb and forefinger. Check. Throw pillow. Check. Gourd. Check. Project name. Kissing Primer, 2 of 3. Notebook number 17. Creating the correct kissing atmosphere. Rain. Proven to heighten passion. See The Notebook for weddings and a funeral. A portable audio device. Provides properly swelling music. See almost every rom-com ever. An epic love poem. To be memorized and recited just prior to the kiss act. Project name, Kissing Primer, 3 of 3. Notebook number 17. Kiss mechanics. Ensure probability of kissing. Extended eye contact. Unnecessary touching. Pucker lips to correct degree of firmness. Well done steak, too firm. Jello, too soft. Tilt head to prevent nose collisions. Lean in. Partner will make up remaining distance. Make contact. Press and hold for 3 to 5 seconds. Pull back slowly. Note, keep eyes closed. Life and death. Ollie's not on the wall. He's not even at the far end of the couch. Instead, he's right in the middle, elbows on knees, stretching and releasing his rubber band. I hesitate in the doorway. His eyes don't leave my face. Does he feel the same urge to occupy the same space? To breathe the same air that I do? I linger at the threshold to the room, uncertain. I could go to his traditional spot next to the wall. I could stay right here in the doorway. I could tell him that we shouldn't push my luck. But I can't. More than that, I don't want to.
I think orange is your color, he says finally.
I'm wearing one of my new t-shirts. It's V-necked and close-fitting and, now, my most favorite piece of clothing. I may buy 10 more of this exact shirt. Thanks. I lay a hand across my stomach. The butterflies are back and restless.
Should I move?
He stretches the rubber band taut between his thumb and index finger. I don't know, I say. He nods and begins to rise. No, wait, I say, pressing my other hand to my stomach and walking over to him. I sit, leaving a foot of space between us. He lets the rubber band snap against his wrist. His shoulders release a tension I didn't realize he'd been holding. Next to him, I press my knees together, hunch my shoulders. I make myself as small as possible, as if my size could belie our closeness. He lifts his arm from his knee, holds his hand out, and wiggles his fingers. All my hesitation vanishes, and I slip my hand into his. Our fingers slide into position as if we've been holding hands like this all our lives. I don't know how the distance between us closes. Did he move? Did I? Now we're next to each other. Thighs touching. Forearms warm against each other. My shoulder pressing into his upper arm. He rubs his thumb across mine, tracing a path from knuckle to wrist. My skin, each individual cell, lights up. Normal, non-sick people get to do this all the time? How do they survive the sensation? How do they keep from touching all the time? He tugs my hand just slightly. It's a question, I know, and I look up from the miracle of our hands to the miracle of his face and eyes and lips moving closer to mine. Did I move? Did he? His breath is warm. And then his lips are brushing butterflies soft against mine. My eyes close on their own. The romantic comedies are right about this part. You have to close your eyes. He pulls away, and my lips are cold. Am I doing it wrong? My eyes fly open and crash into the darkening blue of his. He kisses me like he's afraid to continue, and he's afraid to stop. I grip the front of his shirt and hold on tight. My butterflies are rioting. He squeezes my hand, and my lips part, and we're tasting each other. He tastes like salted caramel and sunshine. Or what I think salted caramel and sunshine tastes like. It tastes like nothing I've ever experienced. Like hope and possibility and the future. I pull away first this time, but only because I need air. If I could, I would kiss him every second of every day for all the days. He leans his forehead against mine. His breath is warm against my nose and cheeks. It's slightly sweet, the kind of sweet that makes you want more. Is it always like that? I ask, breathless.
No, he says. It's never like that.
I hear the wonder in his voice. And just like that, everything changes. Honestly. Later, 8:03 p.m.
No movie night with your mom?
I canceled. Carl is going to be upset with me.
Why?
I promised her I would spend more time with my mom.
I'm messing up your life.
No, please don't think that.
What we did today was crazy.
I know.
What were we thinking?
I don't know.
Maybe we should take a break?
Dot.
Sorry. I'm trying to protect you.
What if protection is not what I need?
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I need you to be safe. I don't want to lose you.
You barely have me. Are you sorry?
For what? For kissing? Honestly?
Of course.
No. Are you sorry?
No. Outside. O-W-T-S-Y-D. The universe and my subconscious may be conspiring against me. I'm in the den playing phonetic with my mom. So far in tonight's game, I've gotten tiles to play outside, O-W-T-S-Y-D, freedom, F-R-I-D-U-M, and secrets, S-E-E-K-R-I-T-S. That last one nets me a bonus for using all seven letters. She frowns down at the board, and I think she's going to challenge my word, but she doesn't. She tallies the score, and for the first time ever, I'm actually winning. I'm ahead of her by 7 points. I look down at the score and then back at her. Are you sure you did that right? I ask. I don't want to beat her on top of everything else. I tally the score to find that she's right. Her eyes are on my face, but I keep staring at the scorecard. She's been like this all night, watchful, as if I'm a puzzle to be worked out. Or maybe I'm being paranoid. Maybe it's the guilt I feel for being so selfish, for wanting to be with Ollie even now. Every moment I spend with him, I learn something new. I become someone new. She takes the scorecard from my hands and lifts my chin so that I have to meet her eyes. What's going on, honey? I'm about to lie to her when there's a sudden high scream from outside. Another scream follows, and then indistinct yelling and a loud slam. We both spin to stare at the window. I start to rise, but my mom presses down on my shoulder, shakes her head. I let her hold me in place. But another scream of "Stop!" has both of us running to the window. The three of them, Ollie, his mom, and his dad, are on the porch. Their bodies form a triangle of misery, fear, and anger. Ollie's in fighter stance, fists clenched, feet planted wide and firm. Even from here, I can see veins bulging to the surface of his arms, his face. His mom takes a step toward Ollie, but he says something to her that makes her retreat. Ollie and his dad face off. His dad is holding a drink in his right hand. He doesn't take his eyes off Ollie as he lifts and finishes it with deep gulps. He holds the empty glass out for Ollie's mom to take. She starts to move, but again Ollie says something to stop her. His dad turns to look at her then, his hand still rigidly holding the glass. For a moment, I think that maybe she won't go to him. But her defiance doesn't last. She takes a step toward him. He grabs at her, all anger and menace. But Ollie's suddenly right there in between them. He swats his dad's arm away and pushes his mom off to the side. Even angrier now, his dad lunges again. Ollie shoves him backward. He bangs into the wall, but doesn't fall. Ollie begins dancing lightly on his feet, shaking out his arms and wrists like a boxer preparing for a bout. He's trying to draw his dad's attention away from his mom. It works. His dad lunges at him fist first. Ollie dodges right and then left. He hops backward down the porch steps just as his dad swings again. His dad misses and momentum sends him tripping down the steps. He lands in a sprawl on the concrete driveway and doesn't move. Ollie grows still. His mom claps both hands over her mouth. My mom wraps an arm around my shoulder. I press my forehead to the glass and grip the windowsill. All of our eyes are on his dad. The moment stretches out. Every second he doesn't move is a terrible relief. His mom is the first to break. She hurries down the steps, crouches down next to him, runs her hand down his back. Ollie gestures for her to get away, but she ignores him. She leans in closer just as his dad flips over onto his back. He snatches her wrist in his big, cruel hands. Face triumphant, he hoists her hand up in the air like it's a trophy that he's won. He pulls himself to standing and drags her up with him. Again, Ollie rushes between them, but this time his dad is ready. Quicker than I've ever seen him move, he lets go of Ollie's mom, grabs the collar of Ollie's shirt, and punches him in the stomach. His mom screams, then I'm screaming too. He punches him again. I don't see what happens next because I pull away from my mom and I'm running. I don't think, I just move. I fly out of the room and down the hall. I'm through the airlock and out the door in no time at all. I don't know where I'm going, but I have to get to him. I don't know what I'm doing, but I have to protect him. I sprint across our grass to the edge of the lawn closest to Ollie's house. His father is lunging for him again when I scream, "Stop!" They both freeze momentarily in place and look at me, shocked. His dad's drunkenness catches up to him. He stumbles back up the steps and into the house. His mom follows. Ollie bends over, holding his stomach. "Are you all right?" I ask. He looks up at me, his face morphing from pain to confusion to fear.
"Go. Go back," he says.
My mom grabs my arm and tries to pull me away. I'm vaguely aware that she's hysterical. She's stronger than I would have thought, but my need to see Ollie is stronger.
"Are you all right?"
I cry out again, unmoving. He straightens up, slowly, gingerly, like something hurts, but the pain doesn't show on his face.
"Mads, I'm okay. Go back. Please."
The full weight of our feeling for each other hangs between us.
"I promise I'm okay," he says again,
and I let myself be pulled away. We're back in the airlock before I start to recognize what I've done. Did I really just go outside? My mom's hand is a vice on my upper arm. She forces me to face her.
"I don't understand," she says, her voice shrill and confused. "Why would you do that?"
"I'm okay," I say, answering the question she doesn't ask. "It was only a minute. Less than a minute." She relinquishes my arm and lifts my chin.
"Why would you risk your life for a total stranger?"
I'm not a skillful enough liar to hide my feelings from her. Ollie's in my skin. She sees the truth.
"He's not a stranger, is he?"
"We're just friends. Online friends," I say. I pause. "I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking. I just wanted to make sure he was okay." I rub my hands down my forearms. My heart beats so fast it hurts. The enormity of what I've done overwhelms me, and I'm trembling. My sudden shaking derails my mom's questioning and sends her into doctor mode. "Did you touch anything?" she asks over and over again. I tell her no, over and over again.
I had to trash your clothes, she says,
after I've taken the shower that she insisted I take. She doesn't look at me as she says it.
And we're going to have to be extra careful for the next few days to make sure nothing's...
She breaks off, unable to say the words. It was less than a minute, I say, for both our benefit.
Sometimes a minute is all it takes.
Her voice is almost not there at all. Mom, I'm sorry. She holds up a hand and shakes her head.
How could you?
She asks, finally meeting my eyes. I'm not sure if she's asking about my going outside or lying to her. I don't have an answer for either question. As soon as she leaves, I go to the window in search of Ollie, but I don't find him. He's probably on the roof. I get into bed. Was I really just outside? What did the air smell like? Was there wind? Did my feet even touch the ground? I touch the skin on my arms, my face. Is it different? Am I? My entire life I've dreamed about being in the world. And now that I have, I don't remember any of it. Just the sight of Ollie doubled over in pain. Just his voice telling me to go back. The third Maddie. I'm almost asleep that night when my door opens. My mom hovers in the doorway, and I keep my eyes closed, pretending to be asleep. Still, she comes in and sits on the bed next to me. For a long time, she doesn't move. Then she leans over, and I'm sure she's going to kiss my forehead, like she used to when I was a little girl. But I roll away from her, still feigning sleep. I don't know why I do it. Who is this new Maddie that is cruel for no reason? She gets up, and I wait to hear the door close before opening my eyes. A single black rubber band sits on my nightstand. She knows. Life is a gift. The next morning, I wake to yelling. At first, I think it's Ollie's family again, but the sound is too close. It's my mom. I've never heard her voice raised before.
How could you do this? How could you let a stranger in here?
I can't hear Carla's response. I open the bedroom door quietly and tiptoe out onto the landing. Carla's standing at the foot of the stairs. My mom is smaller than her in every way, but you wouldn't know it from the way Carla's shrinking away from her. I can't let Carla get blamed for this. I fly down the stairs.
Did something happen? Is she sick?
Carla catches my arm, pats my face, her eyes scanning my body for signs of trouble.
She went outside! Because of him! Because of you!
She turns to face me.
She put her life at risk, and she's been lying to me for weeks!
She turns back to Carla.
You're fired.
No! Please, Mom, it wasn't her fault! She cuts me off with a hand.
Not only her fault, you mean. It was your fault, too.
I'm sorry, I say, but it has no effect on her.
So am I. Carla, pack your things and go.
I'm desperate now. I can't imagine my life without Carla in it.
Please, Mom, please. It won't happen again. Of course it won't. She says it with absolute